everyone. Welcome to our conference call today. We are going to talk about some things that will make a big difference in your ability to persuade and influence. Hold on. There we go. Okay. Now understand, I'm getting an echo here. Hold on, let me mute some things. Okay, we good? All right. Now, getting a lot of questions on a few things. We talked a lot about building trust. We did a couple of laws of persuasion. Anyway, welcome everyone. It's one of those hectic days, but we're here. We're together. We're learning how to persuade, motivate, and influence. We'll spend the first part of the call just talking about some principles, and we'll open up for questions. I know many of you are muted via the net, so you can ask your questions via whypersuasion.com. Otherwise, the rest of you can ask your questions via the phone. And those doing replay, you also have to use whypersuasion.com. All right, let's get our brain back in the game here and talk about, there's the five C's of trust. You've heard me talk about it before. One of the C's I want to hit on today, just based kind of some themes and questions I've been getting that's very, very important that we think our prospect can't really pick up on, but they do. I don't have to tell you, but you already know that the majority, 95%, up to 95% of all persuasion and influence involves a subconscious trigger, right? It's a feeling. So one of the last C's of trust is congruence. Now, this is important because if you're not congruent, they sense it. There's something not quite right. There's indicators that there might be deception. Even if there's not deception, they might feel that something's not quite right. So I want to talk about a few principles that really help you be more congruent. Now, congruence can be defined a lot of ways. Part of it is your words match your actions. Part of it's the energy that you give off. Because you can meet someone within 30 seconds, you decide if they're congruent, you decide if you like them, decide if you trust them. So there's two aspects. The first one I'm only going to spend a minute on because I can't fix it. You have to. What it is your product, your service. If you don't believe in your product or your service, if you don't believe your product or service is worth it, you won't be congruent. In fact, studying objection psychology, those who are going through the psychology of objections realize that the objection that you get the most is the objection you still have. The objection that scares you the most is the objection you get the most, meaning we manifest these things. If you think something's too expensive and you don't really feel that it's worth it, you're going to keep getting that objection over and over and over again. So that's something, again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it. You've got to believe in your product, your service. Otherwise, well, you've got to decide. If you stick there, you can still persuade some people. I mean, that's how it is, but you won't become that power persuader until you really become a product of your product, know that it's worth it, especially for entrepreneurs who are famous for shortchanging the value of what their product's worth. I was working with somebody with their getting their book published, and their infopreneuring products, their information marketing, and they wanted to charge $100. I'm like, no, what you have here is worth $1,000. It's probably even worth $10,000. And they had to get to their mind to the point to be able to do that. That's what it's worth. When you're helping someone make $100,000, they're more than happy to spend $1,000. If you're helping somebody save $50,000, they're more than happy to spend $5,000, and we have to get to that point. So that's the first point. The second point, your congruence, is you, right? Yourself. And there's a couple subsets here we need to talk about that will increase your congruence. Because you can't ignore one aspect of your life and don't think it affects your whole life, especially your congruence, your demeanor, how you come across, your voice. The first one is self-discipline. Now, well, what's that got to do with persuasion? Well, everything. If you're not disciplined within yourself, if you can't persuade yourself, you're not going to be very persuasive to other people. And there's a lot of research that's been done with self-discipline, and we need to understand exactly how it works, not only for yourself, but your ability to motivate and persuade other people. Because in life, you're either going to be disciplined or you're going to be disappointed. And you have to understand that this is important. Because when you set your alarm and don't get up, if you can't get yourself to exercise, if you make promises to yourself and you can't keep them, that hurts your congruence, that hurts your energy, that hurts your psyche, it hurts every aspect of who you are, especially your congruence. And most people just don't realize about their self-discipline. They set a goal, they don't keep it. They're supposed to be better, but they don't. It matters. It affects with your brain. We like to think it doesn't matter, but it does. Here's the interesting thing we need to talk about here. We'll talk a little self-persuasion here. Is when you think about goals, you know, let's say losing weight. That's something that's always on my brain. Got to stay fit. Got to watch what you eat. I think we all know somebody. We can relate to that. When someone has a goal to lose weight, for example, and this could be with any goals, do most people fail in the morning or fail in the evening? And the answer is it's in the evening time. Every time. You know, well, what's going on? Well, think about it. You wake up in the morning, you're refreshed, you are excited for the day, you say no to the donuts, you say no to the bagels, and it, as you go throughout the day, what happens is that your resistance gets weaker and weaker. By the end of the day, you get home, nobody loves you, you had a bad day, nobody cares, and you eat a whole thing of ice cream. So what the current research is showing is that in many ways your willpower, your self-discipline is like a battery. So in the morning, you're great. You're charged up. You're ready to go. Bring on the world. Come on, let's do it. And you do. But every time you resist, every time you say no, every time you take a little energy from that willpower battery, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker to the point where it's nothing there. You can't resist. That's why most people fail with any goal later in the day than they do in the morning. Okay? Now, successful people realize that they're willpower batteries drain. Unsuccessful people just kind of bounce around and don't get it. So a couple factors here we have to talk about is you have to think to yourself, what drains your willpower battery? Well, and we're all a little different here, but there's some common themes, a thread, to where fatigue, as the famous football coach Vince Lombardi says, fatigue makes cowards of us all. So if you're not getting enough sleep, would do it. A low blood sugar would do it. Having to resist throughout the day quite a bit would do it. Ornery coworkers that trigger frustration, resentment, anger, any type of negative emotion. It could be, all those things will do it, but you have to be aware of what's doing to you. But then on the flip side, you have to be aware, my willpower, my self-discipline battery is getting low. I can feel it. You need to have a game plan. And what's your game plan? So if it's a low blood sugar, you probably should eat something healthy. If it's a lack of sleep, maybe you need a little power nap or go to bed early. Maybe it's exercise, meditation. We've noticed when you watch something funny or talk to somebody funny, that recharges your battery. For some, it's being spiritual or praying or scriptures. Maybe it could be walking in the sunshine. There's something about the sun that changes our attitude and our demeanor. Maybe you need to go to bed for the night. You're done. You can't resist. You move on. But when you can't keep promises to yourself, when you can't persuade yourself, when you're not doing the things you know you're supposed to be doing, it sucks your life and you become incongruent. Now, it probably has nothing to do with the product or service that you're persuading, but our overall demeanor, you have to realize that it affects every aspect of your life. You have to know that. You have to understand how that works, and that is your self-discipline. So you need to know exactly what to do. What is going to be your game plan? Now, here's some other things that you can do that'll help you out with your willpower. Is you can break your goals down into smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces, because when the human brain gets overwhelmed, it shuts down, it's too much. So maybe the goal you're looking at is too big. To lose 20 pounds is a big goal. Maybe lose 50 pounds, but can you lose a half a pound a week? Can you skip one meal a day and break it down in smaller pieces? Maybe you want to become a millionaire and you break that down. What does that mean every week? Maybe you want to write a book. Can you write a page a day? Break things down into smaller pieces. You need to make sure you can visualize your future. I mean, if you want to lose weight, you got to see yourself as skinny. You got to believe it. You got to be able to see it, taste it, touch it, feel it. But you have to realize that the universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. Monitor your progress. That is something that will help you out when you go through that, is being able to monitor your progress. Also, you can recruit friends and family to support you. Have a game plan when you're feeling drained. It's all part of that. But you also have to change the way you think. We talked about mentally. That is important for you to understand how that works. So that's the first aspect. And we can spend a lot of time on self-discipline. But you need to realize that if you're not disciplined, you're not going to be successful, but it also affects your congruence, right? So that's the first aspect, is your self-discipline and your willpower. Second aspect, which is interesting, which kind of really got on my radar when I was doing research for the Laws of Charisma, interviewing, monitoring, looking at very successful persuaders and leaders and influential people. And the studies are actually fascinating. Not only the studies, but talking to successful people. Rubbing shoulders with people like Mark Victor Hansen. He's the author of Chicken Soup for the Soul. Wow. Eternal optimist. Everything was great, you know, everything, to the point where sometimes the people are so optimistic, we're like, whoa, 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 too much. But here are the studies. When you're optimistic, And we're all born pretty optimistic. It challenges life, beats us up, things happen, we become more and more pessimistic. And when I'm talking about optimism, it's more than a PMA or positive mental attitude. Because, I mean, if you're always so optimistic, you're sitting on the couch thinking, I'm the best and people like me, I'm rich, I'm a millionaire, they'll probably haul you off, okay? They will haul you off. You have to have an action plan with that. So basically, the research shows that when you're optimistic throughout your life, and I'll define a little bit more here in a second, you live longer. Pessimists do not live as long as optimists. When you're an optimist, you have stronger social networks and more friends, obviously. No one likes to be someone around someone who sucks the life out of you. And that's true if we talk about wealth. The more friends you have, the bigger networks you have, the more people you know, the more successful and the wealthier you are. Wealthy people you watch, they connectors, they know people, they have a lot of friends. Now, obviously, there's a few wealthy people that don't, but I'm talking about the majority of them. An optimistic outlook has demonstrated higher levels of motivation, persistence, and performance. Now, here's an interesting one, is pessimistic people give up twice as fast as optimistic people. So the studies are there. Now, some people just, too much optimism. Well, let's kind of take a look at this and how we're going to define this is being optimistic means that you really believe that you will eventually accomplish everything you set out to do, okay? You eventually believe. You know there's going to be roadblocks. You know you're probably going to hit a few signposts. There might be a few fender benders along the way, but you know you're going to get there. Eventually you're going to get there. Optimism is when you can transfer your hope and courage to others and they want to be around you. Optimism is when you see positive in all the situations. There's going to be negative there too. You want to look around the corners and things and prepare for what could happen, but that's always part of optimism. Now, a subset of optimism too we need to talk about, and then we'll open it up for questions, is attitude is a subset of optimism. And attitude is a reflection of what's happening on the inside. And most people don't think about their attitudes. They just let it happen. They're like chameleons absorbing the attitudes of other people. They wait for someone to cut them off to dictate their attitude for the day. Attitude's a habit that arises from our expectations. Think about that. Attitude, your prospect's attitudes all come from expectations. That's just the reality. They come from expectations. And so what we expect with confidence tends to happen. So when you master attitude and optimism and willpower, like we talked about, that helps your congruence. So when you're optimistic and have the right expectations and you're keeping your goals and you're doing what you need to do, you become more congruent. So what can we do here? Well, if you're a pessimistic person, quit looking for the signs of setback. Don't look for what's wrong, look for what's right. I mean, the things that we're obvious, but we have to get ourselves in the right gear. You can choose to be optimistic. If it's an issue, there's a book called Learned Optimism, Dr. Martin Seligman. A powerful book. It'll teach you that you can actually learn it. Part of that, too, is taking responsibility for setbacks or failures instead of looking for someone to blame. Be around optimistic people sure helps. Your self-talk. And find ways to turn, you know, negative moods into a positive mood. So those are two, you know, kind of different things, but they do affect your congruence and what you're able to accomplish. Congruence, one of the five C's of trust. If you want to know more about that, of course, that's in the Magnetic Persuasion series. Want to know more about optimism and self-discipline? Actually, those are both can be found in the Laws of Charisma. Someone had to ask me a question about that. So this is the time to ask questions about what we talked about today or things that you're running into during the week. Those are on the replay line. Again, you can post those at ypersuasion.com. Those doing Skype that are muted out, you can send your questions via the same website. You're able to do that. Be happy to take a look at those. I've got a few here that we'll go through, but if there's any more, you can send those. If you're on the phone, please let me know. And I'll ask your questions. So send in your questions now. Ask any questions. That is what I'm here for. A question here about, talking about willpower and how I mentioned that you have to see it visually. Let me expound on that a little bit. Well, I mentioned that the universe will not reward you physically until you believe it mentally. Big believer in that. Unless it's created in your mind, unless you can, let's talk about wealth. People earn what they feel they're worth. And their biggest roadblock is mentally they feel they're worth X amount of dollars. Most people, 95% of those that win millions of dollars through lotteries will be bankrupt within 5 years because they don't see themselves as wealthy people, right? Are you with me? And the same thing's true with wealth. It could be weight loss. If you can't see yourself doing it, and on the flip side, if your prospect can't see themselves using your product or service, it's not going to happen. That's why creating that vision is a powerful thing that you can do, okay? And that's something that will help you out. So this is what I'm saying. Let's take, since we start off talking about weight loss. There are a lot of things when people lose weight. I'm in the same category where there's some things you just don't want to give up. So let's say French fries is your nemesis. So you're trying to be good, but you're thinking, French fries, warm, and they're salty, and you, no, I can't. And then you're sitting there for a little while, and it comes back, warm, and they're salty, and you dip them in the ketchup, and down it with a Coke, and it's so good, and it's so tasty. Ooh, and, you know, no, I can't. And you go through the cycles where you're visualizing it, you're seeing it, and eventually you're going to eat French fries. So on the flip side, maybe sometimes you need to change the way you visualize things. You could visualize yourself being successful and optimistic, or you can visualize the flip side. So instead of thinking about those French fries, just think about going to the restaurant, the fast food restaurants, and they put French fries on the tray. And just imagine picking them up with your hand and squeezing as the pulpy mass oozes between your fingers and the yellow lard that's clogging your heart and putting pounds on your butt are just dripping down your arm. Now, if you visualize French fries like that, it would make a big difference. If you visualize yourself taking a bite of that burger and your rear end went a little bit bigger, have a few French fries and your stomach got a little bit bigger, if that's what you visualized, it'd be much easier to not partake of that type of a food. So I visualize myself not to do it versus visualize myself to do it. So another example here, I got another question about that. Give me another example. So I train a lot of people to do presentations, public speaking, and what are they visualizing? Because, I mean, you take a professional athlete, they've seen themselves a professional quarterback. They see them, they don't go out here on the field and, What if I get hurt? What if I throw an interception? What if they boo? What if everyone drops a pass? What if? No, they're winning. Winners win in advance. They're winning. They're throwing their passes. They're being successful. They're doing it. They're making it happen. And they are excited. So take public speaking. If you visualize yourself doing it, people are laughing. You're being persuasive. They're running to back to purchase your products. Things are happening. You're excited. That eventually is going to happen because you've seen it mentally. You visualized it. Versus most people before they speak is what? Oh, I'm scared. What if I forget? What if I trip? What if they don't like me? What if they don't laugh? What if, and well, ding, 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 that is your reward. That's what happens. So you can see kind of two opposites there. That's why they want to repeat, winners win in advance. You take an Olympic athlete that's won a gold medal, and they're on the stand, and the song's playing. They've seen themselves on that stand with the gold medal thousands of times, to the point where it's probably not, I mean, it's still a big deal, but it's happened. They've seen it. They create it mentally. So kind of a long answer to a short question, but I got a couple of them. I want to make sure I hit that right on the head. Good question. Any other question? Over the phone, let me know. Got a few more here. Kurt, how important is congruence over the phone since they can't see my nonverbal gestures? Yeah, well, obviously not as important, but there's still things that come across in your voice. Because it's interesting over the phone, if I can get you to stand up and move, if I can get you to look in a mirror and smile, it increases your ability to persuade. So there's things coming through on the phone. And think about it. When you're talking to a stranger on the phone, you're imagining them. You're seeing their face. You're seeing their facial expressions a lot of times. Now, I record a lot of audios. So some people's first experience with me is audio. And so you're listening to this audio. So you might not even know what I look like. You're imagining what I look like. I have a lot of people when I teach seminars, you know, you don't look like I imagined, or you don't sound like you, or you don't look like your voice. You know, I'm not offended by it. It's just kind of how we are. But it does come across. Again, it's not as important, but you still need to be congruent whether you're over the phone or face-to-face. It does come across in your pauses and your gestures and things that you do. So it is important. Kurt, what if you don't, I believe in my product? Get a new job, start a different company. You know, I don't know what to tell you. That's a tough one because it might be paying really well. You know, a lot of professionals, they don't necessarily like what they're doing, but hey, it pays the bills in this economy. So, you know, you've got to deal with that. Or maybe you need to become a product of the product. You got to get into the testimonials. You got to use the product yourself. You got to believe in it. You've got to understand how it's changing lives. It's one of the first things we do with customer service, because we talk about optimism and attitude in customer service and congruence, that comes across through the phone. The challenge is customer service deals with all the rotten people, all the times the product went wrong, all these things, and so they deal with all the negativity all day long. So the first things you got to do is you got to go through some success stories. You've got to go through things that, look, you're talking to the fringe here. There's not that many people that are having challenges. In fact, this person made this amount of dollars. This solved their problem. This happened here. This happened there, to where it made a big difference. And that's important to get on base. So that answers that question. Any questions over the phone? I know a lot of you are online. Please pipe in and let me know. And yes, the question is being recorded. That's at whypersuasion.com. And that is WHY. And then hopefully, if you can't sell persuasion, then I'm not going to tell you. You have to be learn how to spell that, although it is a very highly misspelled word. All right. Another question. That's kind of off course, but hey, I'll be happy to have it. Kurt, what are these voicemails? What's more persuasive, the longer or short voicemails? Huh. Well, the answer is, yeah, all the above, right? Well, what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. adapted to the personality. You should never give the same voicemails over and over again, ever. So if they're saying, hey, it's Bob, leave me a message, I'll get back to you. Short, sweet, to the point, analytical type personality. Hey, keep it short and sweet. Hey, Bob, found 3 ways to double your income. Give me a call. All right, short message. Intriguing, put a little benefit in there. You listen to a voicemail. Hey, you know, it's Sally. It's good to hear. Your message is important to me. I'll call you back in 24 hours. Maybe there's music in the background. And hey, Laura. Hey, I loved your voicemail. You know, I've been trying to get a hold of you. There, you know, some things I wanted to do. Or I finally found the solution to your challenge. And I know you're going to be really excited about it. And, oh, it's, you know, it's great. And I was looking to get forward to you. But, you know, it's a good weekend. I hope you have a great weekend. And I mean, you can milk that a little while. So the answer, I hope it's the answer you're looking for. But I'm going to go with all of the above. See both long and short, depending as you adapt it to that personality. All right? Any other questions out there, send them to me. I will answer them. There's one coming in here. About optimism, and I did say that optimism could be learned and needs to be learned. And you know, the book I mentioned was Learned Optimism. That's Dr. Seligman, and that is S-E-L-I-G-M-A-N. So with that, everyone, have an incredible week. Become power persuaders. Hey, questions again, whyypersuasion.com, and we'll talk to you next week with the new persuasion influence negotiation topic. Everyone take care, and we'll talk to you soon.